Yes, that's very true. A very good morning to you. It's a Friday morning. It's a Friday morning. So good morning. I hope you're having this, this Friday, a beautiful Friday morning. And welcome to your number one talk radio station, in Namibia. So my name is Mike Oshoveli and this is Unpacking the Day. So this is your daily dose of what is really going on in business, economics, and politics news. So every weekday, we cut through the noise to make sense of the big stories, the trends and the numbers and numbers that are making headlines. And we keep it clear here and always being curious, asking the question that matter and giving you a fresh take on what people are saying out there. So the view shared during our segment do not necessarily reflect those of Eagle FM. So what we do here, we unpack what others are saying and spark a meaningful conversation so that you can be part of the bigger conversation. So you can be, so this is your space and this is your platform to unpack the headlines and get, you know, to the heart of stories that are making headlines. So good morning and welcome. So where are you listening us from? I hope in your area the weather is quite good. So yeah, it's quite good here. So the weather is really good. It's much, there's a nice breeze, you know, nice breeze air. I'm not a weather person. I don't really describe weather term quite as a weather person should. Yeah, but we had a very good rain these days, and it affected. It's one thing. Maybe I should said it at the very beginning. Yesterday, there was a power break. That really affected the broadcasting, not only us, I think on this side, I think almost many radio were affected. So I think it's also affected power lines, and our line today is not working. Our line today is not working. And, you won't be able to call in. Yeah, we apologize for that. It's not on our, it's not our fault. But we're working on it. So we're working on it. So yeah, there was that power breakdown yesterday, across the whole north, actually. Yeah. So yeah, that's unfortunate. But if it's sorted out, in the time I'm on air, I will let you know. No, thank you. Yeah, that's just something that happened. Yeah, but let's get into the grooves of our usual, you know, habit of what we do every day. Yeah. So, our first segment is really looking at, on this day in Africa, we're looking at, significant event that happened in the course of history in our beautiful continent. So good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you find yourself, wherever you're tuning in from across our beautiful continent. So welcome back to On This Day in Africa. So today we are looking back at two powerful moments in history that both took place in month of March. So let's rewind the clock first to March 1960, just day after the world watched in shock. Yesterday we looked at the what happened at Sharpeville. So it just now, after a few days, when the world actually watched in shock as South Africa, South African police opened fire on peaceful protesters in Sharpeville, killing about 69 people and wounding nearly 200 more. We're talking about apartheid South Africa. So now, On this day, the United Nations Security Council sat down for formal discussion about South Africa for the very, very, very first time. Now, this was really historic. So the UN was finally saying loud and clear, we see what is happening. Okay. We see what is happening and we can't stay silent anymore. So this meeting became one of the first major international reaction to apartheid. It sent a powerful message to South Africa, to South African government at that time, that the world that we are watching, the world is watching. And that day, of operating in the shadows, should be coming to an end, must come to an end. And yeah, it was the beginning of the global pressure that would only, grow stronger in the years to come. So, yeah, and let's fast forward 60 years to March 27, 2020. The world at this time, the world was in the grip of a frightening new reality. So a mysterious virus was spreading fast. And do you remember what that virus is? And right here in Africa, Namibia was also taking decisive action. We were taking decisive action already. So on this day, a 21-day lockdown began in two of Namibia's most important economic region. That's Commerce, you know, home to the capital, Ochomithe, and Erongo, you know, Erongo, the coastal you know, economic hub of the Erongo region. So, and this was stage one of Namibia's COVID-19 response. So, well, you remember shops closed, you know, street went quiet. Oh, it was horrible. Family stayed home, you know. So, yeah, it was a moment of uncertainty. At that time, it was a moment of uncertainty, of course, but also a moment of unity. I mean, we get a time to be with our family, you know, that you don't really get that time normally. So, yeah, it brings us together. So, and like so many across our continent, we're protecting one another the best way we knew how. So, yeah. So those are the two significant historical events that we bring you, and that's all for today's edition of this day in Africa. So thank you for listening, and until Monday, I think. All right. So welcome. Good morning. Good morning. If you're just joining us, you're most welcome. It is a Friday. And normally Friday is a very, you know, we take it easy, we go slow, and unfortunately you won't be able to. Today you won't be able to, you know, to communicate to me. We won't be able to discuss together. We have a breakdown, our line. We have a line breakdown. Our line is not working this morning. It's because of yesterday's power breakdown, and it's affected. I think a lot of a lot of things, including the power, the line. Yeah, so it's being sorted out. So yeah, so just to let you know. All right, good morning, and if you're just joining us, welcome to your favorite show, Unpacking the Day. So it's a Friday, March the 27th. Should have been March the 30th. How much day that March have? 31st? Should have been March the 31st, Friday. You know, unfortunately, it's March 27th. We still have a couple of days to go. All right. It would have been a good weekend. Well, okay. Now, the thought for the day. Now, my dear friends, it's time for our thought of the day. But we will get to the thought of the day.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people...
When you choose UNAM,
you get credible accreditations.
You get internationally recognized qualifications.
You get a university with a growing reputation.
When you choose UNAM,
you get a head start on local jobs.
You become connected in a growing Namibia.
You stay in the best country in the world.
Because you already know, you love it here.
Open your mind to UNAM.
And UNAM will open the world to you.
UNAM is your university, Namibia.
Because the you in UNAM is you.
Well, it will be always you. It will always be you. All right. Okay. Let's look at what is our thought for the day this morning. So be not afraid of growing slowly. Be afraid only of standing still. So do not be afraid. Do not be afraid of growing slowly. Be afraid only of standing still. So the proverb means that progress, no matter how small or slow, is better than it's better than doing absolutely nothing. It's better than doing nothing or remaining stagnant. So it encourages patience and persistence. So it's emphasizing that consistent effort, even if it's gradual, or it always lead to growth and some achievement in life. So these proverbs remind us that life is a journey and perseverance is more important than rushing to reach the destiny. So in choices that you're making and decision that you're making today, make sure that you continue. You are not stagnant. Okay? You are not stagnant. And don't rush to reach the destination. But, you know, grow. Be not afraid, but don't be afraid to grow. Okay? Don't be afraid to grow. So that's our thought of the day. And very good morning to you if you're just joining us. So welcome. So you are on board. Feel free. You're welcome. All right. So what do we have this morning? What is in the menu? So yeah, you remember there was a policy. I would say it was a policy where the Ministry of Health actually decided to bypass intermediaries, the middlemen. Well, the Ministry of Health is actually reverting back to purchasing medicine from the local middlemen. That is a story in one of our local newspapers. And the middlemen decided, we are going to inflate the price because you remember you bypassed us last time. So, and it looks like, you know, the ministry is finding itself in a critical shortage of essential drugs, including actually ARVs for HIV. So that's the story that we're going to look at, and quite interesting. So hopefully you unpack that with me. And at around 9 o'clock, we will be speaking to Hopalang Pororo, the UN resident coordinator in Namibia. So, yeah, we're looking at what actually we're going to look at. What is missing? What is missing? What is the missing link in Namibia's employment story? And she have written a piece that we had last week. Was it last week? It was last week Friday, or when was it? Yeah, a piece on unemployment in Namibia. And today we're going to explore how her idea of that national conversation must now shift from solution to coordinated, result-driven kind of actions. So we will have Mrs. Pororo around 9 o'clock. So make sure that you tune in for that discussion as well. So, and well, of course, well, today, unfortunately, as I said, unless it gets sorted out, we have some technical issues. Our line is not, so our studio line is not working this morning because of the power break yesterday that affected our line. So if it's sorted out, I will be able to let you know in time. So, but otherwise, I know you'll be listening and we will do this together. All right. So when we come back, we get into our first item on the show. Stay tuned.
Omutiha utekirwaka guna I matina omjo. Chikao shafa sana na longeshifa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moya o, ota ingongoti samwene. Anangeshifa ya Namibia, ompito ombwa na wa olonjika. Seitha nina omayakuro nirandithoma yoe, yongeshifa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende pi memeha uka kombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengira selma, konarahi tatu imu. Datundatu, heari hamano tano, oniaj. Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back and a very good morning to you if you're just joining us. And it's good to have you. We are very happy to have you on board. So yeah, welcome to Unpacking the Day. So, and this morning we're talking about medicine. All right. We're talking about medicine and talking about real medicine. Okay. ARVs, insulin, vaccines, you know, pain medication, those kind of real medicines. Okay. Now here's the issue. A few months ago, a government told the country it was, the government say, we are going to cut out the middlemen. Okay. So we are going to cut out the middlemen in medicine procurement. So the promise was very simple. So by directly, and so they say that, well, so we're going to cut out the middlemen in medicine procurement and buy directly from the manufacturers. Save the taxpayers money. Those were the reasons. And stop the endless stock out. Remember those? Do you remember that? I do remember that because I did present at it here. So that's why I remember so well. All right. So yeah. So we were cheering that. Everybody who comes through that. Yeah, that's right. That's good. Okay. That's what we're talking about. Yeah. So we were cheering the minister and the ministry for actually doing that. So you're saving taxpayers money and actually the issue of stock out that has been a big problem for years. It's something that is just happening now. So yeah, the ministry even said this new approach had already saved at that time. He said, well, this new approach has already saved more than 221 million. I remember that well. So 221 million and would help stabilize the supply in the long term. So those were the promise that we were told that this policy would actually bring. And we were, as I said, every one of us were very, okay, good. So then we would be able to have enough, you know, we wouldn't be running short of medicine anymore And there are even money available now just because of that. So see? Now, President, even the President, President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, also backed the move. She backed the move, saying Namibia should buy medicine directly from the suppliers and not through costly, as it were referred to, these costly, you know, intermediaries or middlemen, you know? So, yeah. But, well, fast forward to now, okay? Fast forward to today, to now. And the picture looks very, 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 very messy, according to, you know, the report by the, by the Windhoek Observer. So the report looks very, 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 very messy. All right. So a new report by the, Windhoek Observer says the ministry is again, buying from the local pharmaceutical, you know, companies. Well, there's nothing wrong there with that. You know, the very same companies that she tried to bypass last time. The one said, hey, these are costly. And because, what is the reason? The reason because the essential medicines are running low, according to the newspaper. Okay, according to the news, the essential medicines are running low. Now, the article says the shortages are so serious. The shortages are so serious that emergency purchases are being made at, because these are emergency purchases are made at, you know, inflated price, sharply inflated price. So, and the other issues that we talked about, you know, you have also then 200 people, people reportedly close to running out, especially those who actually get the ARVs, people who get their ARVs, one of those medicine that are running low, according to the to the stories that covered by Windhoek Observer. So we have actually about 200 people that are on treatment, and if you have ARV running out, that could be a disaster. That could be a really, really, really disaster. So, yeah. So it's reportedly close to running out. Close to running out. Okay? Let's be accurately correct. Close to running out. All right? So it also says about 700 million, 700 million was returned to Treasury, while hospitals were struggling with low stock. So we're gonna look at that, because that story, from an anonymous, individual, doesn't really make sense. All right. Okay. So, but that's the story. It says that about 700 million was returned to Treasury while the and given now the situation that we're finding ourselves in, while the hospitals were struggling with a low stock. Now, the ministry confirmed low stock levels. The ministry, according to the story, the ministry confirmed the low stock level, but also argues that direct procurement model has not failed. Okay? He said, well, it hasn't failed. Is that just that emergency gap filling is necessary while long-term supply arrangements are being built. So it looks like, you get into a situation where you are not prepared, and then you find yourself with, with your pants down. So my dear listeners, I think how do a government? Okay, we're gonna come back after this.
Great news! IMPA just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of IMPA? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMPA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMPA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
All right, welcome back. So, yeah, if you're just joining us, we're looking at, you know, it seems that the government is reverting back. They are getting back in bed with the middlemen, you know, with the middlemen whom they have really cut off a few months ago. Okay. So, well, as we said, you know, the government is saying, well, the model hasn't failed. The model hasn't failed. It's just that, you know, we still need to build. The government said, we still need to build a long-term supply arrangement. So, but in the meantime, emergency gap filling, is necessary. That's what the government says. So the question is, how does the government say it is saving money? You remember, you know, they're saying we're saving money by cutting out middlemen, then end up rushing back to those same middlemen because, because the shelves are running dry. Eh? That's why I said it's messy. It's messy when you follow the story. Now let's take a family. Let's take for example a family. I'm going to give you a scenario, okay? To just paint this you know, what is happening. Okay, let's take a family that decide No, these brokers, you know, are eating up too much. Okay. From now on, we will buy, the groceries. We will buy, mahangu, cooking oil, school uniform straight from the source. Let's say decided, okay, I think these brokers it's really eating up too much. So now we go right to the source. We're going to buy mahangu, cooking oil, let's say also school uniform straight from the source. Okay. Well, on the face value, well, it may sound smart. Okay. Maybe it's smart. Okay. On the face value, it sounds smart. Now, but then the family forget one thing. So one thing that they have forgot is that the direct supplier is far away. Okay. The direct supplier is far away. There is paperwork. The paperwork takes long. That's one thing. The paperwork takes long. Transport may be delayed. You understand? You know, transport may be delayed. And at the same time, the children still need, they still need food this week. I'm talking about the family now. Still need food this week and not next month. So they still need food this week. And not next month. So what happened? I mean, when you're looking at this scenario, so now what happened? The family that runs back to the local shop at the corner. So they run back to the local shop at the corner. Only now they realize the owner realized, why are you back? Okay. Only now the prices are worse. The shop owner realized that they are desperate. So he make the prices so much more worse. Okay. Now the prices are worse because the shop owner knows the family is desperate. Yeah. Well, that in simple terms, in that scenario is the danger Namibia may be facing. In the medicine story. In these medicine stories, that's exactly what Namibia is facing. because in health, and remember this, in health, I worked in this environment. So in health, desperation is expensive. Desperation is expensive. And even worse, desperation is gefarlik. Is by gefarlik. It's very, 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 very dangerous. So because when now ARV are short, when now ARV are short, as if you read the story, this is not just about, it's not just a procurement issue anymore. It's not just a procurement issue anymore. It becomes a treatment issue. It becomes a trust, a public trust issue. Yeah? And on top of that, it becomes a life issue. It's no more just procurement issue. It's become a life issue. So that's why I said it becomes really, really, really dangerous. But the better word is in Afrikaans, gevaarlijk. Eh? So, yeah. So when insulin is low, when HIV test kits are low, when hospital postpone, we hear that they also postpone procedures because medicines are missing, then the story is no longer about, you know, procurement. It's no longer about paperwork and when to go. So that it lands in the body of the patient now. It lands in the body of the patient. In where? That patient in Katima, that patient in Enana, that patient in Opuo, that patient in Lodres. Right here in our homes. Yeah? Right here, right there in our homes. It lands in the body of the patient. So that's how we need to look at this very, 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 very seriously as citizens. Yeah? So at this messy that we see here. Now, let me give you also a context, okay? Let me give you a kind of, let's understand today, to understand today, we must go back a bit, okay? Just go back a bit so that you understand where we're coming from. So because medicine shortages in Namibia did not start this week, all right? It's not something that we covered this couple of times, some years ago. This has been a recurring problem. It has been a recurring problem, and that's why I think now the minister decided that's why actually this policy come into play. So in area reporting, okay, health officials already warned that the country was actually running low on medicine for HIV. For diabetes, for psychiatric conditions, and hypertensions, I remember, and even vitamin A for babies. So, in 2023, former Minister Kalumbi Shangula blamed the Public Procurement Act. When we experienced those kind of shortages. So the former Minister Kalumbi Shangula blamed the Procurement Act and the slow procurement process for supply problem. So now, regional facilities, I remember at one talking about the Rundu. We always talk about Rundu. Yesterday we talked about Rundu. Yeah, I think it's right for Rundu. Now I can say they are right actually to have a forum that looking at the issues that are affecting, you know, that part of the world. So regional facilities were even told to estimate emergency budget. Remember at that time, I'm talking about the time of Shangula now, so they could buy what was missing while the central system tried to catch up. So, yeah, then came the the reform. Then came the reform push that we're looking at. Minister Esperance Luvendao presented direct procurement as a break from, you know, that broken pattern. So she presented this. This is the solution. So the argument was that Namibia had been paying too much. Her argument was that Namibia had been paying too much through middlemen, through intermediaries, while still suffering stock out. So we're paying too much. We are paying too much, but we're still actually suffering stock out. So we go to the source. And you remember, you know, at that, when the minister was actually talking, the ministry said it engaged, I remember, whatever, 41 pre-qualified manufacturers and wholesalers. 41. And that direct buying could secure better prices, as we were told, could actually secure better prices, the same quality, and more reliable supply. Okay? Using the word of the minister, more reliable supply. So, and it's also linked to this reform push, also linked to the shortage, not only to pricing, but to week-long, you know, long-term contract, warehousing problems, and also poor poor inventory systems. You know, service level at the central medical store had been had reportedly dropped below 57%. I mean, 57%, far below the 80% benchmark. You know, so this I'm giving you some background of where we came from to where how can we transform some of the issues, you know, systemic issues, just within a few months, without really preparing this very well. So, and to be fair, when we're looking at this diagnosis was not coming from politics alone. Okay, it wasn't just coming from politics. A recent peer reviewed study on medicine shortage in Namibia found that the problem is, as I said, the problem is systemic. So it's not just coming from politics alone, but there has been a review also on a study on medicine shortage in Namibia. And it points to heavy dependence on import, that Namibia we are heavily dependent on import in anything, in everything. Everything. Think of anything. What is that we produce? What is that what we are not dependent on imports? Even the toothpicks. Even the toothpicks. Even the toothpick. We depend on imports. So it points out now, I said that reviewed study on medicine shortage in Namibia, as I said, it found that the problem is actually systemic. You know, and it points out heavy dependence on imports. It pointed out the country's small market size as an issue, a lack of local manufacturing. Of course, that's an issue. You have then this rigid procurement rules, so red tape. And the other thing is manual system at the central medical store. That was also highlighted as some of those problems. There was issue also on legal dispute around contracts. And the most important one, the capacity problem. Capacity problem at the Namibia Medicine Regulatory Council. Those are some of the issues that were pointed out the peer review study that was done. So in other words, this crisis is not just about one bad purchase experience or one bad official something, you know. It is about a supply chain with too many weak links, really, as you can see some of the things that we have highlighted there. So it's a disease, all right? If we can use medical, if we can use health language, it's a disease, okay? As you can see, as I said, it's about supply chain. It's about supply chain, and it has too many weak links, all right? So, well, if you're just joining us, good morning, and you're welcome. And unfortunately, today, you will be able to talk to me. You won't be able to call in. Our line is down, and we are attending to that for the later shows. I think for this morning, it will be not possible. Yeah. So, but if it's sorted out quickly as possible, I will let you know. Yeah, we just have a power breakdown yesterday. It was really powerful. It's everywhere, the whole of the north. And I remember listening to the radio and the whole kind of, I tried to tune in other radios and all radios were off, like completely off. Yeah. So yeah, that power breakdown actually affected a lot of things. So yeah, we are on it. So it's just to let you know that you won't be able to come through. Even if you try to call us. Or in the studio. So yeah, and we're talking about, you know, the ministry going back, reverting back to the middleman, you know, according to the stories in our paper in the Windhoek Observer. Okay, it's a story in the Windhoek Observer, okay, by the Windhoek Observers. So but now here is where the story becomes, how would I say? And remember also at 9 o'clock, we will have, and if you're just joining us, at 9 o'clock, we will have an interview with you and country coordinator, Mrs. Hopolang. Pororo. So make sure that you tune in, you stay tuned in for that very, very, very interesting discussion that we will have. Make sure that you tune in. Yeah, so around 9 o'clock, so we will do that. So if now, as I said, looking at this, if direct procurement was introduced to save money and improve supply, so why are we now hearing that emergency buyout from the local companies cost up to 5 times more? You know, they're saying that, well, we want, you know, the direct procurement was introduced actually to save money. But now, when you read the newspaper, it's saying that the emergency buying out from the local companies, the very same intermediaries that we bypass, it's now costing us five times more. Right? It's costing us 5 times more. Beside that, why is there a scramble for ARVs? Why are nearly 300 commodities reportedly affected at the central medical, you know, stores? Why are hospital again? Because in the story, in the article, it said the hospital again are talking about chaos. Yeah? They are talking about chaos. So the ministry says the strategy itself has not failed. Is that what the ministry says? The strategy hasn't failed. That's what the ministry is saying. It says direct procurement is a long-term intervention, and that he mentions purchase that are costing us now are just temporarily gap filling, because manufacturers have a different delivery lead times. Well, you should have known that before you start actually changing things. Madam Minister, you should have known that. Eh? Well, in itself, okay, the explanation is not unreasonable on its face, okay? It's not unreasonable. Any supply system sometimes need, you know, contingency buying, okay? But my brothers and sisters, if the state knew this lead times, if you knew the lead times, where was the buffer stock? You should have a buffer stock. Yeah? Isn't it? Oh, there was that you know, the survey that we're talking about, there's incompetence where? There was also incompetence mentioned somewhere. So there was some kind of incompetence mentioned. And sometimes you really think, is that so difficult, really? It's the same thing that we're talking about. Now, we're looking at the reverting back to intermediaries, to middlemen that we bypass last time, that we're talking about, we're going to cut it off. So it's the same thing, the vision, what is that? The vision, April vision, the vision, April vision? Vision April 2026. Is it Vision April? Yeah, Vision April 2026. You know, or April vision or something. I can't remember which come first. Vision April 2026. Okay, so now it's being, you know, pushed to next year. It lacks proper consultations. And you started immediately to think, oh, this is a good idea. You know, when even from you individually, when I have done that many times, when you think, okay, this is a good idea, you really didn't go into deeper, really analyzing what are the risk, what are the possible other things that might affect, you know, this coming. So you just get excited with the idea and you go on with the idea and you haven't looked at all, you know, the necessary aspect that you need to look at more deeply, more profoundly. And you find yourself, as I said, you find yourself with your pants down. So you're talking about if the state knew this lead, you knew the lead. You know that the procurement, if the long term, as you said, it's a long term. So you know that there will be then temporarily gap filling. Why didn't you then, you know, because of the delivery lead times, then why didn't you have your buffer stocks? Eh? Order more, given it's the same thing we talk about. You know, we're talking about oil, the because of what's happening now in the Middle East. So do we have the buffer, you know, in terms of, okay, for 3 months, even if the war goes on for this is what the minister, there will be the Minister of Mines and Energy will address, you know, the country, will address the country on fuel security. So, yeah. So, but the question is, and the government have been saying that we have, you know, we can go on for 3 months, without any problems. Excuse me. So it's the same thing. It's the same thing. Okay. So where was the planning? Where was the transition management? Where was the transition management? Where was the transition management plan? So, and my dear lady, my dear minister, policy reform is not judged only by intention. You know, you may have a good intention, and we all see that. It's judged by execution. It's the same thing, you know. The changing this country is not judged by good intentions, you know. And many of you, many of the leaders, many of have a good intentions. They are well intent. Whatever they say, things that they talk, they're well intended. But my friend, as I said, you know, you judge by execution. You judge by execution. You do not get full marks for a beautiful plan. You don't get a beautiful mark for a beautiful plan, my dear sister, my dear minister. You get that if the clinic still has, you can't get, you know, full marks if the clinics are still have empty shelves. Huh? No. If they still have empty shelves, you can't get a full marks. So you get a full marks when we see that those shelves are filled up with medicine, you know, consistently. That's where you get a full marks. It's by execution, not by just well intention. Yeah. So the other thing is also, maybe it's something that let's also be honest about something else. Okay. And that's middlemen. So middlemen do not survive in a system for no reasons. Yeah? They don't survive in a system for no reasons. There must be a reason why they're surviving. Yeah? They survive because they solve problems the state has not fully solved. As we say, where did they come? Where does the state come back? They come back to the middlemen. You come back to the middlemen. They survive because they solve a problem the state has not fully solved. They already have, you know, this middlemen already have already registered product. They understand the local paperwork. They can move stock faster. You know, they sit inside the market and they know where the supply is. Yeah. They do. So when the government system are slow, when the registry takes years, when contracts are stuck, when permits delay import, you know, the middleman becomes the emergency door. They become the emergency door that the state keep kicking open. Ooh, hit myself. Gosh. I've tried to point out the door. I'm trying to point out and hit myself. Gosh, you know? Yeah, that's exactly what happens, you know? So, the middleman becomes that emergency door. Okay? So, that the state, you know, keeps kicking open, you know? So that does not make inflated pricing acceptable, but not at all. But it just means that the state cannot defeat intermediaries, you know, by announcing only. You know, you cannot just announce it and think. So it must build. You must build a stronger system, you know, then you must be able to build a stronger system than the one that you are trying to replace, and then the one of intermediaries currently exploit. You have to build a stronger system than that. Otherwise, you know, yeah. So, and right now, that stronger system still looks unfinished. For the government, it still looks unfinished. So, yeah. We will come back to this, but let's see if we can get to my guest. So stay tuned. We will be back, probably talking to Mrs. Hopolang. So stay tuned.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna I matina omjo. Chikao shafa sana nana. Shifa ya eshiwike moshi wana. Iye moya o, ota ingongo tisa mwene. Ana gashifa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa olonjika.
Oh, I have a business idea, but I need help to get it started.
My dear, I have the perfect solution for you. Look no further than the Basecamp Business Incubator.
Basecamp Business Incubator? What's that?
The Basecamp Business Incubator is a startup incubator and innovation hub on a mission to educate, equip, and empower visionary entrepreneurs. Tune into the business and economics segment every Monday live on Eagle FM from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. to hear about the testimonies from the young entrepreneurs that have walked through the hallways of the Basecamp Business Incubator. Visit www.basecamphub.com for more information and start your business journey now.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on it.
Good morning, good morning, and good morning, Namibia. Welcome back to Unpacking the Day. Namibia has set an ambition goal to create a 500,000 jobs. But meeting this target is not just about coming up with ideas. It's about making sure that those ideas actually deliver a result. That means better coordination, clear accountability, and expanding the solution that are already working. So the real question now is not what needs to be done, but how to get it done. So this morning, we are joined by Mrs. Hopolang Pororo, the United Nations Resident Coordinator in Namibia, to explore exactly that, how we can move from promise to practice in Namibia's employment creation effort. So, Mrs. Pororo, good morning and welcome to the show.
Thank you, and very good morning to you, Mike, and thank you for inviting me on the show this morning.
All right. Now, okay, let's start. You have written an article or an opinion piece that actually you have, you know, share with the media. But let's start. When you look at Namibia's job, at jobs crisis or employment crisis, what worries you most?
Okay, thank you so much for the question. Okay, what worries me most is that a lot of these jobs, if I remember the last count, is about 44% of this is youth unemployment. So it's basically young people.
Yeah.
And this is a significant demographic for Namibia as well as, you know, for the continent in general.
Mm.
So it is a major problem when we have lots of young people graduating from universities, tertiary institutions, and some, you know, not even completing their tertiary institution, and then they enter the job market or the labor market, and they're looking for jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, for me, that's a big concern. And, of course, we need to have some solutions
in
order for them to be able to be actively engaged.
Yeah. No, you said we need to have some solution. And when we have, there has been some initiatives. And why do you think, despite many initiatives, youth unemployment remains so high in Namibia?
Okay. So the issue of youth unemployment remaining so high, even though we have many, many initiatives, like part of the problem, of course, is the economy needs to be growing.
Yeah.
Right? So if the economy is growing, the economy will generate those jobs for young people to go into. So what happens is that many initiatives happening, as you say yourself, throughout the country. And the point is that these initiatives sometimes are duplicating each other.
Mm.
And sometimes, you know, the problem is they're not talking to each other.
Mm.
And so they are not coming together. And so everybody is busy with an initiative or another, because every day we read in the media space and there's an initiative by the banks, initiative by private sector, initiative even with the UN, government, and these are all different. So they are not them. So, and some of them are very good, because of course some have happened. But the point is the upscaling and the replication becomes the issue. So they remain small, small interventions, but they don't go to the scale then that is required in order for them to have that impact or that, or leave, you know, some footprint in the country.
Yeah. So now, so we, as we hear, as we're saying, these initiatives actually, sometimes, are not well coordinated. And we often hear a lot about, you know, solution in the media, you know, from either corporate or from the government. There are a couple of initiatives that are, initiatives that we're talking about. What do you see, as the main gap between now identifying solution and actually implementing them?
Okay. So one of the things which, I have also, you know, prior to my becoming an RC, I did work on the unemployment space for young people, right? Youth unemployment.
Yeah.
And one of the things which I learned from other countries is that youth unemployment must be, or employment should be coordinated, or is best when it's coordinated. Yes? Because when it's coordinated, there's an entity that is bringing these pieces together.
Yeah.
And an entity then which is able to then bring in the various parties, because it's also about, you know, youth unemployment is a multi-pronged, it needs a multi-pronged solution, and it's also a multi-stakeholder engagement. Yeah?
Mm.
It's not just government to create the jobs, but it's also then private sector. It's also, you know, the development partners come in as well. So everyone has roles and responsibilities in order to bring this animal together.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, I think, one of the critical things is that, you know, it's the conversations, and as I believe too, it's not the conversations of what needs to be done, but it's the conversation of how and let's do it. Yeah?
Yeah.
Let's do it. Yeah, that's what I think is also part of it. But when we do it, what we tend to do then is we go back into our small silos and we begin to do what we think or what our funds permit or where our expertise lies. But at the end of the day, you know, sometimes where we are, what we are doing should not be done by that relevant partner. It should be done by somebody else. Yeah?
Mm. Yeah.
And so I think we get caught up in all of that. And at the end of the day, then when you start to say, okay, what is the impact of this work that we are doing? It will be small numbers of this project or this program created few jobs. This one created another 100. This one created another 200. Mm. But then after that, you know, that's where it ends. Because now the upscaling replication is problematic.
Yeah. So the other thing is that we also, in dealing with this animal unemployment, we also have to be realistic actually in what we want to achieve. So Namibia want to create a 500,000 jobs. How realistic is that goal in your view?
Okay, so this is a goal which has been set for 5 years. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's always good to have an, have an aspiration, have a goal.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm.
Now the point is, because now if you set the market bar too low, you're probably going to create very few jobs. So you have to set it high. And in setting it high, then I think it's then to say, okay, where can we create jobs? And there are different kinds of jobs which we can create. I'll give an example.
Yeah.
You know, there are some low hanging fruits, for example. You look at the infrastructure construction, right?
Mm.
Now, the point is that those can create a future, they can create short-term, but opportunities for young people, right?
Yeah.
And therefore, then, are we going to capitalize on those kinds of initiatives as well? Because if you can do that, like those infrastructure projects, you can create jobs. They might not be long-term, but at least you're giving young people, you know, some skills and some, you know, some experience, so that when they go to the next job, they don't get there and say, oh, I've never worked before. At least they've worked, and that gives them that opportunity.
Yeah.
So, well, that's one option I see which could raise a or generate a good number of jobs. You have infrastructure, like, in the various regions of the country. How do we then deploy young people instead of then looking to do it in another way? Yeah, because sometimes what we do is we tend to go capital intensive, but let's look for those possibilities which can generate opportunities for young people.
Yeah.
Then, of course, you have, you know, the agriculture sector, which I know is very, is one of the priority areas in the NDP 6. And there, value addition, you can create jobs.
Yeah.
So there are sectors which we can definitely create jobs. There's the emerging sectors of the critical energy transition minerals. UNCTAD did a study a couple of weeks ago, or it launched a study a couple of weeks ago, and it was highlighting, you know, the number of jobs that can be created in that sector as well. So the opportunities are certainly there, but the point is then how we get from here where we are today. Yeah.
Yeah. No, the other issues then, how do we get from where we are to there is the whole question of small and medium enterprises. So the SME. So what we have learned is that many small and micro businesses struggle to survive beyond the first few years. What can be done really to help them not just start, but to grow as well?
Yes, and that's a very good point too, is that I also, what at least observation, reading, I've seen is that there are a number of programs in terms of encouraging young, or let me say encouraging SMEs, right?
Mm.
So, again, that's the easier part, right?
Yeah.
And when I say the easier part, it's the same as, you know, when you provide skills to young people as well. That's an easier part. We can provide skills. But when you skill them and they've got nowhere to go, you have another problem, right? So with the SMEs is that you start them up and provide them with the support that they need to start up. But then how do we also then build an ecosystem that moves beyond, you know, just the starting up in terms of how do you sustain them? They need mentoring. They need coaching. They need access to markets. They need the business regulatory environment needs to change. So I feel that in this ecosystem, we not only focus on the big ones, because the big ones are there and they are doing well, but then how do we also help these young ones? How do we also make sure that even our business regulatory system is also able to accommodate them with their specific needs?
Yeah.
You see, so that's why for me it's an ecosystem. It's making sure that the various components of this SME development is there to help them to grow, help them to be able to access markets, help them to be able to package their items, help them to be able to, you know, there was one, when I got here, there was the Grow Namibia or something. Grow Namibia, Buy Namibia, I think it was.
Yeah.
A campaign. And those are the kinds of initiatives that we need, that locally we support them as well. And not only, you know, look at our eyes on the bigger suppliers, but let's also support them as well. And opportunities beyond Namibia as well. And this is where, you know, instruments or platforms such as the Africa Free Trade Continental Agreement comes into play for us.
Yeah, so there is a recent development in Namibia. The Namibia recently expanded free tertiary education. What opportunity, in your opinion, what opportunities and challenges does this bring for the job market?
So that also too is also, I think, was a big commendable bold step. Yes.
Yeah.
And bold in the sense that access to, you know, education is really increases and people are going to be able to get qualified, get the skills, etc. So that's a good thing. Education is always a good thing. Now the issue too is, I think, in terms of the free education is what our institutions offering as well.
Mm.
Because if we are offering the same of the same, then when we talk about some of these emerging sectors, we don't have enough of a pipeline going in today.
Yeah.
So this is where, again, conservation, private sector, tertiary institutions, and, you know, government becomes important. because the issue is, where, what are the skills for the future? And are we then building those skills in order for these young people to go into those areas so that they can be able to find jobs? Because if not, the other danger is that you'll have a whole pipeline of students who are going to be graduating, and this is going to be in the next, of course, some of them are 3-4 year programs. You've got a pipeline of young people who are also then going to access the coming into the job market. So, again, is that pipeline, where are they going to go once they finish? And this is what then we've got to think ahead. We've got to think quickly and move in that direction. And this is where, you know, work around policies becomes very important, because much as we are creating the jobs, there's one part of it where we create the jobs. There's the other part of it where we prepare for those jobs. And the training and the skilling is one part, the demand side. But you need also now the supply, because they are providing a supply of able, educated young people to enter the labor market. But the demand now, in terms of when they finish, which sectors are they going to go to? How easily are they going to find opportunities? That's, I think, the million-dollar question. Yeah.
So you also mentioned the skilling and training. So how do you see TVET and skill training contributing to job creation at a scale?
Okay. So again, this is the point of matching the skills to the market. And this is where then the curriculum of our tertiary institutions, are they speaking to some of these sectors which we are talking about? Renewable energy, critically important, and will be an important one going forward.
Yeah.
Are we having young people who are able to occupy those jobs? Are we able to have also, when you look at the space around the AI, are we also able to prepare them for those type of jobs in that sector?
Mm.
And, you know, areas such as, you know, soft skills like emotional intelligence and all of that, these are important skills which young people will require for jobs, because if we don't prepare them for that part as well, they'll get into job markets, probably see things the way they don't, the way they, or they have their own way of how they see the job, and it doesn't pan out like that, then they say, no, this is not for me, and off they go. But when you have some of those softer skills, we are taught that, you know, you persevere, you work your way, but you also show that you are able to put something or provide or bring talent or bring solutions into the job place, you last longer.
So the in your opinion piece, you mentioned scaling what works. Can you explain the concept of scaling what works and why it's so important for Namibia's employment goals?
Okay, great. Thank you very much for the question. Yes. Okay, so scaling up now, when we talk about it, is that as we've agreed, or as we've already spoken, is that we have many of these programs which are good, or initiatives that are good, that you can see that they can really contribute to addressing the issue of youth unemployment.
Yeah.
Now, the scale is where the problem is. Now, how we see that this issue of scale could be looked at is we look at platforms such that we have, which is the Global Accelerator on Jobs and Social Protection for Just Transitions, right?
Yeah.
Now, this is a platform. It's a 2-year catalytical program supported, or 3 agencies on it, ILO, UNDP, and FAO. And the point behind this Global Accelerator is not so much that is going to create those jobs that we are talking about, right? Because the money is not much. It's, you know, $1.8 million. It's not much money for 2 years, right?
Mm.
But the issue is what it is doing is looking, for example, at one sector, which is biomass for young people.
Yeah.
And it's looking to say, okay, how can jobs be created? So it's more like a pilot, right?
Mm.
And then, of course, there's a lot of policy work happening under the Global Accelerator, like a development of a national youth employment policy. There's also employment impact assessments in various sectors being undertaken. So these are more the policy, these are more the intangibles, right?
Yeah.
But these intangibles are the ones then that are ultimately going to guide processes going forward. Yeah?
Mm.
And within the Global Accelerator, there was a roadmap, which is saying, how can we accelerate towards job creation before 2030 when the SDGs come to an end. So the point is that that facility of the Global Accelerator provides that platform to say, okay, there are many other initiatives which are happening. One which we can talk about is, of course, which has just started, is the National Youth Enterprise Fund, right?
Mm.
And the point then is then how do you bring in other financing windows? Blended finance, how do you bring in other financing, you know, from, for example, the World Bank, African Development Bank, because these are the ones who have the larger amounts of money to upscale some of these activities. Government, domestic financing too, how do they also bring that issue of upscaling into their budget as well?
Yeah.
So it's not just government, it's not just, you know, the World Banks and whatever, and, you know, other parts, and let me say private sector, but it's how then are we working together to make sure that what we've seen there is working and we want to put more money in place to make it go up or to deliver more on it.
But
each one then of the partners brings in what they can bring in. You know, the UN, for example, we've done some of this work before. We've got modules, for example, of youth enterprise development courses. How do we bring them on the table?
Yeah.
We run also competitions to attract, you know, the young people who are business-minded, because sometimes if you get the wrong young people for businesses, the businesses won't survive. You've got to have that business mindset, and you can't be expecting grants and loans. You have to at some point go look for money where you have to pay your interest and pay your loans up so that you can move your business in the right direction.
Yeah. But is Namibia seeking support from the global accelerators in terms of our employment agenda?
Yes, as I mentioned, Namibia is one of the pathfinding countries for the Global Accelerator.
Okay.
So definitely it is, you know, it was one of the first countries in Africa to become that pathfinding country. So definitely it is looking at that. And this is then, as I say, this is the key word you must remember, it's catalytic of funding.
Yeah.
So the purpose of it is just to show what could work, but then someone needs to carry it forward, and it has to be then either domestic financing, either IFIs, international financing institutions, or private sector. And this then is conversation, communication, and seeing how then to work this or move forward, rather than then going to start another initiative which doesn't build on this one. Yeah?
Yeah. Mm. So now, the other thing is also the impact assessment. In terms of how do you measure whether now job creation programs are delivering really impact beyond probably just the number of participation?
Okay. Mm. So your question is now?
The question is that with all the job creation programs, how does someone then measure whether those job creation programs are delivering the real impact? You know, can we be able to see that even in the rural areas and so on?
Okay. So again, I think it's the nature of the programs. Remember, nature of programs, projects, they come and go.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's where I think the catch is now, is that in the first year, probably the program is kicking off, it's getting started, it's whatnot. Next year, the year after, if it's a 2 year, it might start creating a few jobs, right?
Yeah.
Then the question is, if you go back now and check and see the numbers a year later, 2 years later, are those companies, those businesses, those SMEs that started, are they still there?
Mm.
And if they are not there anymore, then I don't think we've really addressed the problem. Yeah? Because what you want is you want jobs that are sustainable. You want jobs to continue, right?
Yeah.
And that's where I think then the catch becomes, is that now, first of all, is that even when you start off the programs, right, which we have, who then has some understanding of those jobs, what they are doing, and who then is going to be able to go and track them and monitor them over time or report back to some system then which coordinates. That's how then we'll be able to have an idea of where we are moving in this journey towards jobs. But the point is that if no one is reporting, no one is taking stock of this, then, we are just doing business. Yeah, a lot of activities. But we don't even know then that impact of those jobs. And that's what I think is the key point, is when you go back 2-3 years later, what is there? What is left?
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah?
Yeah. You also mentioned that the private sector actually need to be involved. It shouldn't be just a government, you know, responsibility alone. So what role, you mentioned a few things earlier, but what role should the private sector play in moving this agenda from, you know, you say it from promise to practice. So what is their role in moving this agenda?
Okay. So again, let me put a couple of points. So
yeah.
There was last year organized by NIPD, the Namibia Public-Private Forum, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the private sector was there. Yeah. And thereafter, the president established then the presidential task force for the economic growth sector, right? Which obviously will talk to jobs.
Yeah. Mm.
So the point is that on that those platforms, these are your bigger private sector, right?
Mm, mm.
And that bigger private sector is generating some jobs, but a lot of those jobs which are happening are with the smaller ones, right?
Mm.
So now, is there a way that big private sector can work closely with these young ones? I mean, with the smaller ones, you know, in terms of, for example, subcontracting, in terms of also making that link, as I say, because a lot of private sector, what they have is they have their corporate social responsibility programs, right?
Yeah.
Now the question is, rather than each one having their own small private, their own corporate social responsibility program, can they be coming together and integration of them so that they are better able then to support these younger ones, these the smaller ones, yeah? So there's a role there which definitely can be played, right?
Yeah.
That's one. Secondly, also, too, you have the bank, right? So the bank, the windows that they have, how helpful are those windows for the smaller, the smaller enterprises? Because if they are requiring, you know, a lot of collateral and whatnot, then that becomes another problem.
Yeah.
Even looking at windows for women enterprises as well, or women-owned enterprises. So again, how are we supporting that as well? Because again, when you look at our market as well, it's not just businesses that are owned by men,
yeah.
Businesses that are owned by women, businesses that are owned by persons with disabilities. How are we also ensuring that we are also targeting them as well in order for growth? So the handholding is what private sector can also support.
Yeah.
Smaller
entities. Yeah. 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 So, and finally, before I let you go, if you could tell every Namibian one thing about maybe turning promises, as your article say, turning promises into practice, what would that be?
I think there are many things. There's no one single answer there's no one silver bullet. And the point is, what I always say is youth unemployment in any country and the countries I've worked with is that there's no silver bullet. Even the enterprise development is not going to solve the problem, right?
Yeah.
So the first thing we do, which is required or which would help, is what is getting the economy to work, right? So diversifying the economy, I think, is critical, because some jobs, new jobs will be created, not some, but new jobs will be created, emerging sectors, etc. So that's important, diversification of the economy. Secondly, is that the youth unemployment is not just government, it's all of us.
Yeah.
And so it needs all hands on deck, but it needs also the conversation, and we need also better coordination. Yeah, that's what it is. And we need to just move forward, and the conversations which we are having should not be about the what anymore. It's about how, and let's get it done. And not so much too, because, you know, we can spend a lot of time on conversation, but it's the how. But it's the how, I think, it's then connecting the dots. And this is why then there's roles, specific roles for each entity to play, including the UN as well.
Yeah.
But that's where then I think then we have to then come together and say, it's time now to get this going. Yeah? 2030 is not far.
Yeah.
Around the corner, 500,000 jobs. How are we going to get there? Let's get on with it. So young people also too, this is my last one, is also we have the National Youth Service. How do we also engage young people who also be deployed, different regions, and also contributing to employment. How do we look at, as I say, some of this housing infrastructure? How do we get them to be involved in those contracts to be able to get their hands on deck and get their hands dirty and begin to also...
Imbaya rile ombo nai etetaweza kwa ombu nikiro ombe ombu kusha. Njiviro yoye irile ombu kuwa hatani na wina ikare no mafa kumurungu wa indi. Warile ongere kusha umune onjengu ukura kwa imba. Una ovi umedia peke kwa londola mirongo vitati na hambu umwe umwe stoo. Kwika ovi mki mkukara noruka onda ambe ya peke yukia nja oshimari.
Alright, alright. This is Hopalam kwa Pororo. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for joining us. Something just distracted. Okay. No, I just wanted to say thank you very much for joining us on Unpacking the Day. We appreciate your time and your insight this morning. And thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mike, for having me. And I have enjoyed the conversation, and I hope the listeners have enjoyed it as well.
Oh, no, definitely. They probably would have enjoyed it as well. Yeah.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Thank you, and thank you.
All right. All right.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
All right. Welcome back. And Mrs. Hopalam Pororo, the United Nations resident coordinator in Namibia, for her insight on the issue of employment creation effort in Namibia. So it's unfortunate that you won't be able to call in this morning. As I said earlier on, if you're just joining us, just to let you know that our studio line is down due to the power breakdown yesterday. So it's still being sorted out. Hopefully for the next programs that are coming, you will be able to do that. So we are attending to it. But it's unfortunate that you won't be able to react to the discussion that I have with Mrs. Hopalam. So yeah, but anyway, I hope you are listening. Really, definitely, as she said, she showed so she enjoyed the discussion, and I hopefully you have also enjoyed the discussion, because it's giving us a different perspective of how we need to look at our issue, at the issue of employment creation. Very interesting. A couple of points that she actually have mentioned, and probably it's worth a discussion. Yeah, so I nearly said Duke, you know, the old habits. So I nearly said, well, come through, and you won't be able to do that. Yeah, so good. That's it. That's it. That was the discussion. So yeah, it's unfortunate that you won't be able to come through. All right. So And we continue. We didn't finish the earlier discussion that I was having in terms of the issue of what we were discussing, you know. The issue of medicine procurement system in terms of now the ministry actually coming back, sidelined middlemen and coming back, you know, to the middlemen when it finds itself in a situation where, without medicines, running short of medicines. So let's quickly just. I was talking about why middlemen remain powerful. As I said, they remain powerful because they solve problems that the ministry can't. You know, they have things ready. Registered products. They understand the local paperwork. They can move stock faster than the government. They sit inside, as I said, the market, and they know where the supply is. So, and that would take the government time to actually establish that, and that's why in emergency they run back to the same people they bypass. So at the moment, as I said, the what the ministry is trying to do is not yet finished. It's still unfinished. And the other things the article points out is it points to a regulatory delay at Namibia Medical Medicine Regulatory Council. So with some products taking 3 to 5 years to register, and that is actually huge. So if different procurement depends on overseas manufacturer, but those products cannot move quickly through the regulatory gate, then the policy will hit a wall. Definitely the policy will hit a wall. So by the time the paperwork is done, the patient, definitely the patient, by the time it's done. So the patient may already have gone without treatment. Yeah? So that's a really, really, a very, very serious issue that need to be taken seriously. So now the report, they also talk about the 700 million return to Treasury comes from, and it indicated that it come from unnamed source cited by the. That's how the article cited that. The same, I'd also report some very striking price comparisons, okay, including a case involving a polio vaccine where the direct procurement prices was said actually to be much higher than the previous intermediary price. So, but the ministry did not release detailed pricing data in response. So I think we must be careful. Those claims are serious, and but they also need fuller public documentation to be independently tested. So it's just something that maybe one need to be cautious about when reading the article. That said, even if we put aside the disputed numbers, one thing is already clear. It's really, really, really clear that there is a supply strain. Okay, the ministry itself acknowledged reduced stock level. That the ministry have acknowledged, and if health workers are reporting postpone operation and how and low stock or of basic medicines, then the operation crisis is, it's real enough. That's real enough. And even before every pricing dispute is settled. So that in itself, it's actually real enough. So for me, the main issue is not whether one headline was too dramatic. You know, the main issue is this. And this is to, that's my take from this. Namibia is still does not have a medicine, a procurement system that is consistently fast, transparent, and shockproof. You know, international shockproof. All right. So, yeah. So we still don't have any medicine procurement system, given what the government actually, given the reform the government actually came up with. So, and this is very important. And this is the part that is very important for me, looking at this. So maybe looking at why this is important today. Why do we focus on things like this? Because talk about ARV. ARV are not, now, today, ARV are not luxury item. They are no longer luxury item. They are not luxury item, actually. Namibia has one of the most serious HIV burden in the region. So, now, treatment and also the treatment continuity is very, is everything. Eh? And we have done it well, and we have done exceptionally well in terms of that. Now, the disruption in ARV is not like running out of what? Running out of office paper. It's not the same as like running out of office paper. It can lead to treatment interruption. This is about treatment, and it can lead to treatment interruption. Health deterioration of people who are on treatment. Resistance risk. Eh? So, and also fear. The people that are actually going now, the people who can get their medication, fear among patients who already carrying, well, with this kind of situation, they're already carrying enough stress. And now, knowing that there's no medicine available, they go and say there's no medicine, so that it creates fear among the patients. And this whole thing is also, it does matter economically too. It does matter economically. When clinic runs short, eh, patients are told to do what? To go and buy privately. If they can. Because that, well, if you can, you know, I remember, excuse me. So I remember I quickly, I think I happened to be in an area and there was a clinic, and I went in there. I have to wait for quite a long time. So, but to see the doctor, it took me about 3 or 4 hours, actually, you know, to go through that system. Yeah, and that's how you experience what people are going through. So, but that's the only thing. I couldn't travel anywhere, but that's where I need to, you know, to get that treatment. And I was, the medicine that would help me much better was not in the pharmacy, in the clinic. It was not there. So they said, well, you know, you can buy it privately if you can. You know, they give me, this is the prescription, and you can go and buy it at the pharmacy. And the pharmacy, where now I need to go and buy, it's about 100 kilometers from where I was. Oh, gosh. It was even better than if I could have just gone, you know, to the hospital that is 100 kilometers away. So, yeah, but most Namibians are already under pressure when we're talking about, you know, as I said, it also matters economically. Okay? It matters economically because patients are already under pressure. They are already under pressure. So what happened? You know, so some delays. You know, some cut tables. Now when this happened now, you have then, you know, patients, you know, they are delayed, their treatment are delayed, they are, you know, And I remember this. There are some people who cut. They started actually, and that's a true thing. It's a true thing. People start actually cutting tablets, you know, because, you know, they are afraid they might get finished before the supply comes back. Before the supply comes. So what do? They cut the tablets. Yeah. And sometimes it takes now people to travel to some facilities that are very far, because in your area they are nothing. And well, some people just simply go home without anything. And that's how procurement failure becomes a poverty story. Yeah? That's how it becomes a poverty story. It is also a governance story. Okay? It's also a governance story. A state cannot claim victory because it saved millions on papers. Yeah? Because it saved millions. If the health system is still end up buying in panic, as we can see, and at the premium prices on top of that, then you can't claim, you know, that you have saved millions. Yeah? Because you are in a worse situation than before. Yeah? Savings are real. They are only real when the medicine reaches the patient. Then we can understand. When the medicine reaches the patient, then the saving is real. And it's not just reaching them on time, in full, yeah? Not where now we have people have to cut, you know, to cut tablets, you know, in full. And at the right cost as well. So not now when you have to spend the premium price. At the right cost. So there's a lot that need to be done. Okay? That's a lot that need to be done. So, yeah, the story is bigger than a tender fight. You know, it's really bigger than a tender fight. It's about whether Namibia can build a medicine supply system that put patients first, and the background is clear. Medicine shortages have been building for years. Government then moved to direct procurement as a new reform, saying it would save money and cut out inflated intermediary costs. But now, under pressure from shortages, so it appears to be using local suppliers again for emergency purchases. So, and that raises a serious question about planning, about execution, and of course accountability. So minister have to take accountable for that as well. Now the ministry say this is a temporary gap filling, you know. It's not that the policy has failed. And well, but the critics say if shelves are empty, the model is not working as promised. If shelves are empty, then the model is not working as promised. So the truth may be that Namibia is caught in the middle of a reform. That was necessary, I think, in some way it was necessary, but not yet fully built. That reform hasn't been fully, definitely built. So I wish you were able to come through and share your opinion. But anyway, that's what it is. As someone used to say, things happen. I didn't want to say the word, but it does happen. So, all right. What's the time? It's about 49 minutes past the hour of 9. Well, this is Unpacking the Day. And, but on these stories, the bottom line is very simple. When medicine is run low, the biggest victim is not the ministry, okay? The biggest victim is not the ministry. The biggest victim is not the supplier. So it's not the politician either. The biggest victim is the patient. The patient is the biggest victim. So, well, this is Unpacking the Day, if you're just joining us. And I am keeping eye on this. I'm keeping eye on this one. And because in Namibia, access to medicine is not just a management issue. It's a dignity. It's a dignity issue. So, and we are keeping eye on this to see how this actually work out in the end. All right. Okay. Let's move in today's edition of the Villager. Yeah. Okay. There is a story that, as I said earlier on, I mentioned this some earlier on, the country's fuel supply situation. It's actually need to be, it's got to be known today. What, I don't know when exactly, maybe it's going on already. Today, all eyes are on the minister, on minister's update about Namibia's fuel supply security. So, and well, let's be honest. This is not just, a technical, government briefing. It's, this is, you have to look at that. This is, it's not that simple as that, just a technical government briefing. This is a household story, you know, because it affects a household. It's a taxman story because it would affect definitely a tax driver. It's a fishing industry story. It's a farmer story. It is a long distance truck story. Even maybe the Mahangu and bread story. Yeah. Because once the fuel, you know, shakes, literally, you know, almost everything else start to shake with it. It will start to shake with it. So yeah, make sure there's a story in today's edition on that the minister will be able to know what is our fuel security in Namibia. Now, the immediate concern is the Middle East. All right, the tension there is not just about politics and military power. It's also about the route. You have heard this now talking about, you open up any news and they are talking about the route called the Strait of Hormuz, you know. So that is the main, I think, the main thing in terms of what is happening here. Now, this is one of the world's most important oil choke point, as they call it, and the international agency, the International Energy Agency, says in 2025, almost 20 million barrel per day, 20 million barrel per day of crude oil product move through that narrow passage. 20 million barrel per day move through that passage. Now, that is around, you know, 25% of global seaborne oil trade. So the U.S. the U.S. Energy Information Administration says flows through that strait in 2024 average 20 million barrel per day, equal to about 20% of global petroleum liquid consumption. So when that route is closed or is threatened, I think the market does not actually respond. That does not wait politely, you know. The price goes up. So the price definitely goes up. And that's where Namibia comes in. That's where we comes in. We are not a major oil producer yet. Hopefully, in few years we will be. Hopefully, and we might not be in this position, you know. Yeah, we are not producer yet, oil producer yet, but we are still heavily import. We are still heavily import dependent for the fuel that actually keep this country moving, as we are for everything else. I remember when I said earlier on, we are still dependent. Eh? We're still dependent even for, we are still import dependent on toothpicks. Eh? So we are dependent for everything, everything. Eh? And if we can be dependent for, definitely for toothpicks, then we are dependent. There's nothing that we produce. So yeah, as I said, we are heavily import dependent for fuel that definitely keep the country operating or moving. And the latest January 2026 trade reporting says Namibia imported petroleum oil worth of 1.5 billion in that month alone. Just in that month alone, 1.5 billion. You know? So, yeah. And that made petroleum oils 16.9% of the country's total oil bill. Right? So, maybe it's something just think about, you know? Nearly one in every six import dollars. Think of that. More or less, okay, went into fuel. It went into fuel. That tells you fuel is not a side story in this economy. It's not just some kind of a side story in this. It is the central. It is very central. So when global shipping lane, like the one of Hormuz, Strait of Hormuz, so when it becomes tightened, when it become, you know, when it closed, Namibia feel it through. We feel it through two pressure point. Okay. We feel it through two pressure point. One, first, physical supply risk. Can the fuel still arrive on time? That's the question. It's a physical supply risk. And second, price risk. If it arrives, how much more will it pay? How much more will we pay? So those are the two pressure points that Namibia will feel this. All right. So now on the first point, the message from government so far has been, do not panic. Okay. You shouldn't panic. We got it all, you know, we got it. It's we got it under control. You know, officials say Namibia has adequate stock and there is no fuel shortage right now. Right now. Just underline the word right now. Okay? The country's national oil storage facility at Walvis Bay has a capacity of about 75 million liters. And authority says they say that can help cover the country for up to 3 months. Okay? So let's hope that that's very true and that won't affect much of the second part. Okay? And on top of that, fuel companies are reportedly required to hold at least 30 days of additional reserves. 30 days of additional reserves. The companies, the fuel companies themselves. So in a simple term, Namibia is not standing completely naked. We are not standing completely naked in a storm. Okay. So, because there is buffer. Yeah. And this is what I was explaining earlier on with medicines. Okay. So if we need if we know the lead time, why wouldn't have a buffer? You know, so here in this case, we seem to have a buffer. Okay, there is a buffer. But here is the part we must not romanticize. Okay, so because a buffer is not the same thing as immunity. Okay, so storage help with availability at this point in time. it does not magically cancel global price, you know, pressure. So it does not cancel that. And that price pressure is already visible. It is already visible. The IEA said in its March 2026 oil market report that benchmark crude prices surge now by about $20 per barrel to around 92 after hostilities escalated from last February. And other reporting says Brent crude oil even pushed past 100 a barrel, you know, during the recent volatility. So, yeah, government may be able to slow the pain for a while. Our government may be able to do that, but it cannot fully really escape the mathematics of the international oil market. They cannot escape that at all. So, and that brings us to what Namibians really, really want to know from the minister today. Will fuel price go up? That's what we want to know. Will fuel price go up? And as of March 2026, Wavish Bay pump price were left unchanged. There was nothing changed. There was no increase in pump. It was left unchanged at 19.58 per liter for petrol and 19.63 for diesel part per. Diesel 50 per part per parts per million. So and 19.19 Namibian dollar, 19 Namibian dollar 73 cent for diesel 10 parts per million. Now the PPM. Underneath those steady pump prices, the pressure is already showing. The pressure is already showing. The ministry recorded an over recovery of 5.04 cent per liter on petrol, but under recovery of 40.04 cent on diesel, 50 ppm. Parts per million, and much steeper when you're also looking at the 89.8977 cent on diesel 10 ppm. Now that means diesel, especially is already costing more in reality than what is currently being recovered at the pump. So it's already doing that. So the real question is not only whether Namibia has fuel in the tanks, the big question is for how long can the state absorb the shocks before motorists absorb it? For how long would that be transferred now to us? So, yeah. Our time is about 3 minutes past the hour of 10. It's Friday, and let's bring us to the end of unpacking the day this week. And I'm gonna hand over now to Tate France coming up with Kutha Mosha. So thank you for listening. It was unfortunate this morning that we couldn't come through. Hopefully. For the programs that are coming later on, that should be sorted out. Our land line, studio line should be sorted out. All right. I wish you a very great weekend. I hope it's going to rain so that you can rest better. I wish you a splendid weekend. And from me, Mike Ashaveli, I'll see you tomorrow. I'll talk to you tomorrow from 11 to 1 o'clock on Unpacking the Day. It's a goodbye and enjoy your weekend.